Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Hey there, podcast listeners. Matthew Winter here. Thank you. Thank you all so much for these generous donations that you've been making to help support this podcast, to help support its production, the host site where I store all the files, and the production of the podcast. It means so much to me to have your support and your words of encouragement and just knowing that you're there cheering me on as I do this passion project, connecting with authors and illustrators and award winners and up-and-comers, and getting to know their story and then getting to share it with all of you. It means a ton to me to know that you're listening. I thank you so much for that. I'm leaving the donate tab of the podcast homepage open at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com if you're still interested in donating and I haven't figured out if it's the right time for you or not. It's okay. It's a personal decision. What matters most is that you're still listening. That you're part of this conversation we're having about the incredible work going on in children's publishing. And just that you're helping to be an advocate for these books and these authors and illustrators too. So whenever and wherever you're listening to this, thanks. All right, let's get busy. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, kidlit notables, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winter, an elementary school librarian, author of the Busy Librarian blog, and your host. This is episode number 168 with Louise Borden, author most recently of Kindergarten Luck, which is published by Chronicle Books and is illustrated by Genevieve Godbout. I spoke to Louise just after she had returned from Nerd Camp, which, if you're new to this amazing unconference, is basically a two-day event wherein book lovers, children's literature talents and advocates, and all other members of the Nerdy Book Club or otherwise, all converge at a high school in Michigan for a literary and literacy-focused professional development experience. Too amazing for this description to do it justice. Check the show notes for links to the Nerd Camp archives. It's a topic Louise and I return to throughout our chat as it serves as a great landing spot for a conversation about the evolution of technology and the nature of research when writing books for children. It's really all too much for me to try to sum up in this introduction, so why don't I just turn you over to our chat? I hope you enjoyed the listen. Here's episode number 168 of the podcast with Louise Borden. Let's get busy. Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast, Louise Borden. I am so excited to talk to you tonight.
Well, I'm excited to be talking to someone in Maryland, one of my favorite states, Matthew. So here we go.
You know, Maryland really welcomed me warmly. I moved here in high school, and ever since then, my career has been here, and the people that I love the most are around
Ellicott City, where we're saying where I live, which is a wonderful thing. And I'm glad to know that you come by here pretty regularly too. So that means I get to brush shoulders with you one day. That makes me super excited.
Oh, I sure do. And I love to fly over that Chesapeake Bay. It's so beautiful.
It's gorgeous, right?
Really beautiful. I'm a water person.
Are you working on a Chesapeake Bay book?
You know, I had an idea for something about the Bay some years ago when I was working with Margaret McElderry, who's no longer living. And I may revisit that idea. Mm. I never pursued writing the full text, but I had three or four images that I was going to go with. So if I do, I'll call you up and tell you that I'm going to do this. Okay?
The Chesapeake Bay is for me that geographic location that I feel like I could write poems about. It's just so beautiful. Every spot I've been on the Bay, everywhere I go, there's just a great peace and a vibrance in the wildlife. It's a beautiful thing.
It is. It is. Even the name of it. I have a new book coming out. I just am signing a contract any minute for this book. And there's a ship that goes out through Hampton Roads. And so I got to mention that. And I was really excited.
Yeah.
Put that part in. It's a tiny detail in a much longer book.
Hmm. Well, I'm so glad, Louise, that we connected tonight. And that really that Laura from Chronicle connected us to that. I got the opportunity to read Kindergarten Luck and to also get to read it to my rising kindergartners, as we call them, my preschool students at Duckett's Lane. It was great to be able to read a kindergarten book to them and just about, I don't know, school experiences. And you've got these great illustrations by Genevieve in it. And I'm excited that there's another Louise Borden book out there. I love your stuff. And this feels so different from the other stuff you've worked on.
Thank you. Yes, it does. Because I've been working on some longer books, nonfiction, World War II, involving a lot of research. And my roots really are in picture books. My very first book, Caps, Hats, Socks, and Mittens, which is still in print, only had 300 words. And then I moved on to other illustrated picture books, including most recently Big Brothers Don't Take Naps. So I really love to write in a spare way. And I kind of wanted to explore luck and pennies. And it was just recently at Nerd Camp 2015 and spoke with kids about the book and handed them pennies as they left. And it was interesting. Some kids would take a shiny brand new penny out of my hand. I had a pile of them. And some kids would take an older penny because I told them, when you find a penny, whether it's Lincoln face up or the other side, to look at the date. And I don't think kids really look at the years of the pennies. And so they got all excited. Oh, I have one from 1975. Mine's from 2008. That's when I was born. And so it just kind of had a whole nother layer to looking at the book. If you, you know, add this concept of pennies and, you know, how old they are and what was going on when that penny was made. And so hopefully teachers will pick up on that and might be able to add that to their, when they're reading the book and talk about that with their students.
Well, and it's even causing me to observe this notion that the kids were selective about what pennies they found and that some were drawn to the shiny newness of a penny, but some perhaps, maybe I'm just putting this idea on them, but it seems like some were looking for one that was a little bit more worn, maybe one that was filled with a little bit more luck.
Right. I think so. And I told them that I had looked down one day recently in May and I found a penny and I picked it up. I said, this must be a really old penny. And I turned it over and it was from 1944, the same year that a book I wrote called Across the Blue Pacific takes place and a submarine is missing in action, a true submarine from our country that was missing during World War II. And that very day I was going to an event involving a veteran who had served aboard that submarine. So I thought that was just amazing. I find that very day a penny from 1944. So I told the kids this story and I think they were thinking, well, maybe an older penny, maybe it won't be as old as 1944, but it will have, you know, a shine of history on it too. And think of all the places a penny's been, if it's an older penny. And also it's probably brought a lot more luck to people than a brand new one from 2014 or 2015.
Yeah, and I love the idea of luck is something that I think about a lot, and what it actually means. If there is such a thing as luck, or if it's that the belief in luck is something that causes, you know, good things to come to us, or causes us to perceive good things. And I like that in your story, that it's not as though life-changing events are happening because Theodore finds this penny, but that it's a different outlook for him, that things look up for him, that things look bluer skies and like they're going the right way. And there are some things that he does get to be, you know, first in line or picked to do different groups, but it seems more of almost in that same way of finding a penny heads up. It seems more like Theodore is having a chance to be heads up, looking at his world and seeing all the good things going on around him.
Totally. I'm just so moved that you saw that in the book, Matthew, because, you know, I always have an emotional connection when I'm writing, and, you know, that's essentially what I was trying to convey through words, and you just stated it beautifully. So maybe we could put you as a co-author.
Oh, good Lord. Just don't make me blurb the book. Those are the hardest things to do ever.
No, but it was, you know, but that's really what I was thinking when I was writing it.
Oh, that's great. Well, it carries across very well. And I think Genevieve's illustrations carry that too. You just see on Theodore's face, just there's a contentedness from the moment that he finds this penny. There's a contentedness and a just that he is looking up, that things do look better. And there are people around him that are not having such a great time, but you know, to me, it felt like a permission that there are days when we feel that way, and that's okay. And you see the same characters repeated throughout the book, that they are happier. It's not as if we're seeing, well, if Theodore has all the good luck, then this kid's going to have all the bad luck.
Right. No, I think, you know, and I think when we don't have a penny in our pocket, sometimes we're carrying something else with us. You know, it's like, you know, a good friendship or a good friend. It's and your friend isn't with you, but it's like having, you know, a blue stone in your pocket, or, you know, just the people we know and the creative work we do with books and kids and schools and libraries. It's, you know, it's just kind of joy in our pocket. And so obviously when he passes it along to Slim, Theodore is going to have his own to carry on into the day for tomorrow. But when I look at the book and I see the word Theodore, the name of the character, that comes from one of our kids. His first name is Theodore. But when I was first working on the book, Henry was the character's name, and it was a counting book. And the first two titles, I have a dummy here because I was showing it to kids at Nerd Camp. One title I had for the same text was called Henry's Good Luck, and then the other title was Counting on Luck. And in this book, Henry was doing a lot of what Theodore's doing, and was also counting. And then it was just too much going on in the book. So after, you know, 20 revisions and reading it aloud over and over, I just started over and changed the name to Theodore, and which I think might be kind of fun for kids to say. And, you know, it's not that common a name these days. And so names are important in my work. I think about names and I change them around until I think I found just the right one to go with that character.
I wasn't even thinking just on the most basic of just changing the name. I kept thinking that he found a penny, and it says your text reads, it starts off reading, "One gloomy morning, Theodore found a bright, shiny penny on the way down to breakfast. There was Abraham Lincoln, face up. What luck! Oh, thank you, Mr. Famous President," Theodore said. And right away I was like, wait, Theodore's a famous president too. This is great.
You know, and that was, you know, sometimes these amazing coincidences or layers just appear in books, because I wasn't thinking of Theodore Roosevelt when I was writing the book. I was thinking of our son, Theodore, whom we call Ted. So, you know, maybe kids will pick up on that. I don't know. But look at that. The word Theodore is right underneath president.
It's right there.
Famous president.
Well, and to say a long multi-syllabic name like Theodore is sort of a fun thing to say, too. It sort of has a resonance in your mouth. I like that because it makes us then continue to think about the character. But also, I mean, think about, I guess, not to draw too much from it, but the idea of keeping something in your pocket, right? I can't help think about, and when you were at Nerd Camp, you were surrounded by people that celebrate this. We have this holiday in April that we celebrate Poem in Your Pocket Day, where you keep a poem in your pocket all day long. And whenever anyone asks if you have a poem in your pocket, you take it out and you share it with them. But one of the things I've seen from doing this year after year is that you get to a point where you no longer need to take the poem out of your pocket to recite it, that you know it, that it's almost like you have an assurance that it's there. You can feel it in your pocket. There's a weight of it in your pocket. But now the words are in your mind and on your tongue. And there was a moment in this story where that happened with Henry, where it happened with Theodore too, where he has this fear of, I can't find my penny, where is it? And then he remembered, oh, it's in my right pocket. And that he had gone for so long not needing it. But then that that physical touch of knowing, oh, there it is. Everything's going to be
there
okay.
Everything's going to be okay. Yeah. And I think kids in kindergarten, I have to place myself in kindergarten when I'm writing about it, when I am that character. And, you know, I feel the same way on days like that, you know, did I put it in my right pocket or my left pocket?
Yeah.
So it's really wonderful as a creative writer to go up and down the scale of ages. Sometimes I'm a third grader. Sometimes I'm putting myself in the shoes of a principal or, you know, a little girl. And in this case here, you know, I am Theodore because I'm doing all of this through the school day. And Slim is my good buddy, you know, my bus driver.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I have a 4-year-old who's going into kindergarten next year. He'll be 5 in a couple weeks, we were saying. Actually, by the time your podcast posts, this episode posts, he'll be 5, which is exciting. But to know already that at that age, that there are special grown-ups in his life that he asks about by name. In fact, we have Will. Will at Mom's at the grocery store that we go to, that he always sees if Will's there. And, hey, Will, he calls down the aisle. And it's that feeling of you know nothing more than this is a face that brings you joy. And to have that carried through, it just feels so on the nose and so observant, Louise, to see you write that way and to be that skill of putting yourself in the body, in the experience, in the day of a 5 or 6-year-old or any character age for that matter is something that I think that takes skill. They say anyone can write a book, but I certainly don't think they say anyone can write it well. That takes a special talent.
Well, I think kids, and I know this from observation of my own kids and, my neighborhood or whatever, but, you know, kids have their parents. I mean, they just cling to their parents or their siblings or their grandparents or and their cousins. And then it's like, you know, ripples going out in the pond. Then their next set of people are, you know, the mailman. Maybe they have a special, you know, name for that, or the bus driver. And, you know, your son knows Will, you know, at the store and, they're trying out themselves on the world and learning about these new people and new friendships and the roles that those people play in their lives. It's fun. So Slim is, he's a friend of mine. Slim appeared actually in an earlier book I wrote many, many years ago, but he drove a cement mixer. So I put him back in a book. He's younger in this book.
Oh, back in time, Slim.
Back in time.
Way to go.
Yes.
And we all wish that in the next book of our life that we would be younger. How about that?
Yeah. And Slim is a good balance on saying it to Theodore. You know, Slim is a short word, a short name, sounds differently. And I tell kids that the sound of words is so important, especially in picture books, because they're poetry.
Yeah, the sound of words is so important. I love that. Sound of words. When you went to Nerd Camp, did you get to attend I know they have two things. Did you get to attend like Nerd Camp proper and then that Nerd Camp Junior that they have for kids? Is that a separate day?
Yes, yes. The third year, and the first year it was just teachers and librarians and writers and adults, no kids. And also it was the true ed camp where we generated ideas that we wanted to learn about.
Right.
And last year they expanded it to 2 days. And the numbers grew from 200 to, I don't know, hundreds more. And there were set sessions on day one. And then on day two, again, it was the Ed Camp model of generating ideas.
Oh, cool.
And then they added this Nerd Camp Junior, where hundreds of children came the second night. The first night, people just go out for dinner.
But oh,
the second
in the evening. Night, okay.
Second night, all the teachers and the librarians leave. You know, their Nerd Camp is over. And then the community sends children to Nerd Camp Junior. So last year I went and I participated just briefly because I had to bow out of being an author for Nerd Camp Junior because Raoul Wallenberg was getting a gold medal at the Capitol Rotunda on July 7th last year. So I went from Nerd Camp straight to DC to attend that ceremony.
Right.
So this year, the numbers grew to, I don't know, I think there were 900 people there.
Holy cow, Colby Sharp, look what you've pulled together. What a great thing.
From many states. I mean, you know, Indiana, Wisconsin. I think there were people from Maryland, Massachusetts, New York, California. All of the authors came on their own dime.
I had a number of friends that I knew were coming in, just exactly as you're saying, spending their own money to go just to be a part of it, which is what a strong testament to the experience itself.
Oh, it was amazing and remarkable. And day one, on the schedule in the morning, it began with quote nerd talks. And there were four or five wonderful luminaries in our world of books who spoke for 10 minutes, different perspective about the joy of reading and the power of books. And it was electrifying. Everyone was on the edge of their seats. And then we all went into these fabulous sessions and ranging from technology to, you know, YA fantasy. And it was just fabulous. So of Twitter. To unite the reading world, really.
Yeah, I got to be the power of Twitter. I got to be sort of attending the conference virtually in some way, seeing photographs of what other people were sharing and books that they had and experiences and quotes of people. I saw a ton of quotes from Lisa Graff. And I just think every word she says is gold. So that makes perfect sense to me.
Yes.
Cool.
So if we miss going to certain conferences or events, really, it is just...
It's there.
Amazing that we can follow it on Twitter and see all the tweets and just know, you know, you just step into that, you step into that landscape with all those people. So
how has that process been for you, being a person that has seen these different tech tools become sort of part of the mainstay of our culture over the course of your career? That's become a new thing. I mean, when you were first starting to write, I know that there's a level of expectation from the publisher that you, the author, will help to market your book. But in 2015, that's a whole different ballgame because we've got Twitter and Tumblr and Facebook and Instagram, and there's really quite a way that you can reach a number of people now. We're such a connected society anymore.
Oh, totally, totally. It's totally different. And when I look back on 15 years ago.
Yeah.
When I was deep into the research for The Journey That Saved Curious George, this was before Google really was in our lives. I mean, I was using faxes, emails, phone calls, going to Europe, tracking down people, you know, using paper maps to find a chateau and, you know, various addresses that I'd found in the archives. I did it before Google, you know, and I started in 1999, and then now you hit Chateau Fougas on your iPhone and bang, there it is right there in your hand in less than 2 seconds. And so GPS, I mean, everything has changed. As to the marketing, yes, it used to be more bookstore events or you go to conferences and, you know, I've been in hundreds of schools. So that kind of was a form of marketing, but now
Everything's
in the moment. Everything's on, you know, and that's, and Twitter's amazing. I mean, you can send word out of something and thousands of people will see it right away. I mean, you can't do that if you had an article in the New York Times or, you know, you were on a blurb on TV.
It's just
amazing.
Yeah. And further than that, not only can you send it out and thousands of people will see it, we'll all help you share it with more people. So you have this sort of crowdsourced marketing now that, you know, when you build these relationships with people through things like Twitter, especially through Twitter chats, because so many of us in the Nerdy Book Club connect through different Twitter chats where we're meeting up each week or each month to talk about books or what have you over Twitter, or we just keep up with one another that way through Facebook or whatever different tools. You just end up being that when it comes time to have a new book come out, people are just aware already. You already have a big street team behind the book because we all are friends. We all want to celebrate new releases and cool art and, you know, signing a new contract to stuff like that.
Oh, I know. And to meet people across the country, it's just, it's remarkable. There are downsides to everything, of course.
Right.
And, you know, one thing for me, because, you know, writers work in solitude. And so I love the community of writers that I have and, you know, going beyond my desk. But when you're trying to get through a manuscript and, you know, a really challenging subject or something, I don't really have, you know, the time to go. I'm not very good on Facebook because I feel like it just takes me down a black hole. I mean, Twitter is fast and I can do that. But between travel and writing and your family and all of that, you only have so many hours in the day. I kind of need an 8-day week, I think. or maybe I need a wife. I don't know. But my husband is so supportive of everything I do. So, I'm just teasing about that. But, you know, there's only so much time. And I love winter when it's cold and, you know, I don't travel that much then because, you know, I love it if I get snowed in because then I can really sit and, you know, do my creative work, which is where these books come from, you know. And I think some people get so hung up on promotion and marketing, but certainly the circle of friends are also my encouragers. And, you know, it's really expanded my life in a marvelous way.
Well, I'm glad to see that you are a person that has embraced it because there are plenty of people in the library world and the kidlit world, alike that maybe they see it as a distraction or they just don't quite get it. And that's okay that they don't get it. But I feel like we were saying, we keep going back to the Nerdy Book Club experience. You're just sort of missing out. If you're not a part of this and you're missing so much positivity and hope and, getting to know the people that you're writing for or the people that read to the people you're writing for.
Yes. Yes. We're all joined in this, you know, magic circle of reading. We're all doing, you know, you're painting or you're writing words or you're sharing books. And, you know, my closest friends are librarians and teachers. I mean, you guys are my heroes and have been for many years. That's why I put you in books. Because, you know, everyone should be alone in your library or your classroom for 5 days. Everyone. Yeah. And just the power and the meaning that you bring to kids' lives is remarkable.
They're sacred places. So, those of us that are in libraries, those of us that are in schools, I know we all have that. We all have those different places that are special to us. But, you know, being a librarian, and I came from the classroom, I can tell you that there are moments before the kids come in at a school day that I can sit in that library and just breathe in the energy, knowing the way that the library is used and loved and what it means to me and the school and the people in the school. It's a really special thing. I mean, I hope that those same feelings that I attributed to our library growing up or the things I hope that our library could have been when I was younger, I hope that that's what my students get to experience now and that kids are experiencing hopefully all across the country.
Yes. Well, you're totally an artist, Matthew. I mean, I go into various school libraries and you can just tell. You can tell when the passion is there with the person who is, you know, worked on that collection or is sharing books with kids or doing marvelous things with books. And, you know, they're not all the same. You know, everyone kind of has their own style. But I think the power of the professional development through Twitter is to, you know, bring along some people who are afraid of technology or, you know, maybe they're battling something in their school district. I don't know. But as you said, the positive energy and the hope that's there, it's just so supportive. And so I think people are missing out on something wonderful. Yeah, I don't disparage them because they're not tech savvy or they're not doing it. But I just say, you know, this will really expand what you're doing. And but there are a lot of people still who don't know about the Nerdy Book Club, or they're not, you know, they're not, they feel like Twitter is something trivial, or I don't know. They're afraid of the technology. For me, it's not a personal thing. I mean, it's personal with the friendships, but I tell them I'm not putting on Twitter what I had for breakfast. I'm sharing ideas or sharing something that inspires me that I've seen in a book, in a library, in a person. So
you're putting more beauty out into the world. I always think of it that way. If we're using our voices, our platforms to speak out, hopefully we're doing it to make the world a little bit more beautiful. I mean, I love that there are these resources where some of us can just, we take pictures of books and just say, I read this book and I loved it. Just to be able to have a public place to exclaim it and know that if I love it and you read it and then you love it too, then we're connected. And we're that experience of being connected, but also of enjoying the same thing or enjoying the same thing for different reasons. That's a really cool thing. And I think librarians, like authors, we work alone most of the day. Even though kids come in and see us, which is wonderful, there are not many other people in the building, if any at all, that know what it is that we do, really, or that do what we do, really. And so being able to be on Twitter and to not be alone, but to have people speak your language is a special thing.
It is. We're speaking this similar language, and we speak it with children too. I feel like I speak their language at times when I move into their world in my writing, you know, and or if I'm writing about someone from long ago or an historic event, I can kind of be a witness by stepping into that and listening to them, to their language. But with kids, you know, when you hang out with kids, you just, they're so smart. I learn so much from kids, and, you know, it's like their world is my classroom. It's really fabulous.
Yeah. Hey, Louise, what brought you into writing? Because you've been writing for, you said 15 or so years. Did that start just in raising children of your own or getting to be around kids a lot?
Yeah. And I've been writing for pretty long. My first book was published in 1989.
Oh, okay.
Because I look younger than I am.
Well, 26 years. My goodness, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's been a while. But when I was a kid, I was a reader before I was a writer, and I wanted to be a composer when I grew up. I had a fabulous music teacher in our school, and I was taking piano lessons in third and fourth grade, and I was terrible at piano. But she had a little book in her classroom called The Story of 100 Great Composers, this little red book. And I asked her if I could have that book. And she said, no, I need it for my teaching. But then when I left the elementary school in sixth grade, that day, that final picnic with the principal and all the people, all the parents were there in the sunshine, my music teacher, Miss Korn, came up and gave me that little red book. And I still have it. And of course, I didn't grow up to be a composer, but I feel like I'm composing books, composing words. It's like a composition of my words. I don't think that I'm writing a story, really. Some people feel that they're storytellers, and I'm a visual person. It comes out of my hand, and I feel like I'm working on a book. So I'm thinking about the structure of the book. I'm thinking about how I'm going to begin the book, where it's going to end. I have no idea what's going on in the middle, but each of my books has a different structure. It might open with a short page that leads the reader into, you know, nonfiction that could be inaccessible to kids, but I'm trying to open that door into a love of history. Or it might be a school story about a custodian. So I'll begin with the definition of what the word custodian is. So structure and making books, I feel like I'm making something. And that's why I make a book dummy, even though I'm not going to illustrate it. I need to know about the page turns, and I make multiple dummies for each of my texts. And then finally type it, you know, when I'm finally finished, and we'll send that manuscript to my editor. I don't know if I've gotten off track here, but
no, I mean, my wife is a music teacher, and music is certainly a major part of our house. And so after 2 years of interviewing people, Louise, I've never heard someone like in writing a book to, in no small way, orchestrating a piece of music, of composition that way. And I love that imagery. It's so evocative. And I can just see, I'm picturing that movie Amadeus, but I'm picturing you orchestrating the words in your mind. I love that.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, you're composing text, and sometimes I write poems about the research that I'm doing. I wrote some poems that I was on a train going to Brittany from Paris. I was doing some research for a French Resistance book that I've just finished working on this spring. Mm. And the sound of those words and the kind of the rhythm and the cadence of a poem leads me into finding the voice for the book, because each of my books has, you know, some are told in first person, some are told in third person, but the sound of that voice is so important. And I think it's akin to music. And I love to listen to music, but I also love to go to an art museum. And just want the National Gallery, when we were living outside of DC, I just spent hours in there, and just looking at art feeds my writing, or looking at beautiful architecture, or hearing music. I think all the arts, they just rub against each other in a wonderful way. And whether, you know, I'm not a musician and I'm not a painter, but those forms of art really inspire me and help me in my own work.
Ah, Louise, I have chills. I have goosebumps because of the way you're describing this. I love this. Ah, I can't even believe I have to tell you this. Our time has slipped through our fingers, Louise. It's come and it's gone. And I don't, I'm so thankful that I got a chance to talk to you tonight. You speak poetry, Louise. I don't know how else to say it. I know your books, I'm familiar with your work, and I know that, the way you speak have a love of language and playing with words is poetic, but to hear you talk and to hear it come from the source the way that it has tonight has been really magical. I'm going to look at your books differently, knowing that this is the voice that is giving voice to those words. I want you to know I really appreciate that I got to talk to you tonight.
Well, I loved our conversation, Matthew. Anytime, and you're my friend in Maryland, so I'll come down 95 to Ellicott City.
You totally should.
Yeah. So do we have a kickball game or something?
Oh, let's talk about it. So I'm assembling an all-star kid-lit dream team kickball tournament. And Louise, I'd love to know what one person, alive or past, from the kid-lit world you would want on your team and why.
Well, I thought about this long and hard, Matthew. That's really hard. I have a difficult time finding just the right person, because there's so many competing for this team. But I think I found just the right person for your team. He's no longer living. Mm-hmm. He was born in 1898. And his name is H.A. Ray.
Oh.
He created Curious George.
I should have seen the clues. They were all out there in our conversation.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, I think you need someone who smokes a pipe and is losing his hair and was probably will have a sketchbook under his arm during the game. But wherever H.A. Ray's art appears, mischief and magic also come. Mm. So I think that you'll find something will go wrong at that game. Someone will go the wrong way or trip, just the way George towards as life goes, but then it will all be right in the end. So you'll probably win. So I think he's going to be on the winning side. So I would put H.A. Ray on my team.
What a marvelous answer. I love how thoughtful that was and how how fun
good.
That is.
Good. Can't wait to see the final lineup.
No doubt. Well, Louise, I'm so thankful that you came onto the podcast. Thanks for talking about Kindergarten Luck and best of luck with that releasing. And I can't wait to be thinking about all these schools you're visiting and all of the pennies that these kids are going to hold and the weight that this story will have with them as hopefully that penny will in their pocket.
Great. Thank you so much, Matthew. Have a great summer.
Like what you hear? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave a comment on the blog at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep and I'll see you there.